We'll get started now. It's approximately 9:30, June 9th, and June 10th, excuse me. I have two different emails in front of me. This is the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting, June 10th at 9:30 a.m. We're in room 464 of the State Capitol Building in Pierce, South Dakota. Joining me today, my name is Gary Hansen. Joining me today are Commissioners Colbeck and Johnson. The first item on the agenda is administration. We have minutes of two commission meetings, April 8th and April 22nd. Is there a motion for approval of those minutes?
So moved.
Any discussion on amendments, deletions, additions to those minutes? If not, Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen votes aye. The minutes are approved. Second item is consumer reports, and the status report will be brought to us by Deb Gregg.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. The commission has received a total of 129 contacts since the last report was prepared for the May 20th, 2008 commission meeting. 16 of the contacts involved telecommunication services, 31 of the contacts involved electrical services, 18 contacts involved natural gas services, 14 contacts involved cell phone service, 27 contacts related to the Do Not Call registry, and one contact was related to wind energy. 22 of the contacts received related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 975 of the 1,034 complaints received in 2008 have been resolved, and 2,300 of the 2,337 complaints received in 2007 have been resolved.
Deb, Ms. Gregg, you said 2,300 of the 2,337. Well, that's definitely in the 99 percentile, isn't it? Good job. Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, since Chairman Hansen brings it up, I mean, what's the nature of those 37 that are outstanding? Typically, when would we expect to have those resolved?
Some of them are the formal complaints with reduced rate long distance. And as soon as that is brought up the next hearing, those will be taken care of, the majority of them.
The others, is it easy to lump them into any particular categories to give us an idea of what's outstanding?
One of them is another formal complaint that's coming forward here soon. Mr. Roger Hall is one of the complaints that's coming forward. And as soon as those are resolved, that will close up 2007.
Thank you. The first item up before us on docket is natural gas, NG08-005, in the matter of the filing by MidAmerican Energy for approval of First Amendment to Natural Gas Service Agreement. And the question before the commission is, shall the commission approve the amendment to Natural Gas Service Agreement with less than 30 days' notice? And forgive me, I did not check on the line to make sure folks are with us. My assumption is you folks are always there. Susan Stewart, are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here, of course.
You're just always there, aren't you?
Not always, but today I am.
And Donna Collins, are you online as well?
Yes, I am.
And as long as I've started, I'll check with Tom Dixon. Are you there?
Yes, good morning, Your Honor. I am present.
Good morning. Mike Bradley, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Welcome all. Is there anyone else on the telephone lines who I have not asked?
Mr. Chairman, Don Price is also on for MCI Metro. This is Tom Dixon, and he's Director of Regulatory Policy for us and present for our proceeding as well.
Don Price? Is
Don Price.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? If not, we will continue with natural gas. And Susan?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. MidAmerican has requested approval of an amendment to a natural gas service agreement that we have with SAPA Extrusions, Inc. SAPA is a successor to Alumac. Back in 1994, the commission approved a contract with deviations between MidAmerican and Alumac that allows MidAmerican to provide gas service to Alumac, and it was the Alumac from bypassing the MidAmerican system. The amendment has one purpose. What that purpose is to modify the balancing provisions of the agreement. Instead of balancing provisions that are not standard provisions, we'll SAPA will now be able to take advantage of our tariff balancing provisions. We've requested that this agreement be in effect June 1st of this year. We apologize for the short notice, but we were not in, this amendment didn't come to pass until about the end of May. What this will allow SAPA to do is to participate in the group balancing services provided by different marketers, which would not have been available to them if they had non-standard balancing provisions in effect. Donna Collins is the marketing representative working with SAPA, and she can answer any questions that you may have about this amendment.
Thank you. I would appreciate it if there's anyone from SAPA that wishes to speak at the present time, then we'll go to staff on this. If not, Mr. Jacobson, are you taking this one?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. As Susan explained, this is a contract regarding the balancing provisions of the existing contract, filed with less than 30 days notice and requesting an effective date of June 1st. In speaking to the company, it was my opinion, and I'm not an attorney, but that the June 1st was probably not doable, but I said that if we took it up on the 10th, we could make the effective date June 10th. Other than that, we'd recommend approval of the revision of the amendment to the contract and on with less than 30 days notice.
Thank you. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on this item?
This is Susan Stewart. I'd like to make one other comment. We have filed this morning an update to our tariff sheet that would reflect this change if the Commission should approve this amendment today.
Thank you. And could you tell me, please, either you or Mr. Jacobson or someone from SAPA, the change will place SAPA in with a group of customers. How will that affect the other customers? Or will there be an effect on them?
Donna Collins from MidAmerican, could you speak to that?
Yes, we have available group balancing for customers, and a given gas supplier can enroll those customers in a group balancing program, and so that in essence, MidAmerican looks at that customer group as one customer. So one customer may be have used over and another used under, but the net effect is nothing, is zero. And so it's of benefit to a customer to be in that group program.
Is there any effect on the customers who are presently in the group by SAPA going into that group? Will they experience any changes?
Typically, the larger the group, so SAPA would make the group deliveries larger. The larger the group, the benefit, the more benefit there is to the customer, because as the usage becomes larger, the net effect of a smaller customer's over or under usage becomes less significant.
Do you anticipate that to be? Have you done any analysis to assure you that that's what's taking place here?
Not specifically, no.
Okay, so you're really not certain, but you would anticipate, is that correct, that this will be a benefit to all customers?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Chairman.
Any other questions?
Chairman,
excuse
if I
me.
Could.
Yes, Mr. Jacobson.
It's my understanding that the way this is going to work is that the group is actually outside of MidAmerican. It's not part of MidAmerican's group balancing provisions. The balancing tariff provisions referenced in the filing are not the group balancing provisions. It's my understanding that a marketer is independently offering to set up to handle the balancing for the customer through a group kind of below the line set up outside of MidAmerican's tariff provisions. That was my understanding of it. So in that effect, in that consequence, there really is no effect at all on other customers. It's done outside of MidAmerican's tariff. So it's just another way for the customer to shift the risk from balancing from one of MidAmerican's alternative provisions to just having a marketer take care of it outside of the. It does work similar, very similar to the group balancing provisions of MidAmerican's, but pursuant to the cited tariff pages that this customer will utilize, those are just, it's not group balancing within MidAmerican, it's a group balancing outside of MidAmerican.
All right.
So it's really zero effect on other customers.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate that explanation. Are there any other questions by the commissioners?
For anyone, if the effective date was June 10th as opposed to June 1st, what sort of consequences does that have for SAP or MidAmerican?
I'm not sure about that, but I don't think legally there's an alternative to doing that. So maybe MidAmerican could address that. Actually, the balancing, it'd be an extra 10 days under the previous balancing provisions. Not exactly sure if that affects the customer or not.
What time period does an entity or group have to be balanced within?
Typically, this is Donna Collins, and typically it is in a calendar month. A customer would be in a group beginning the first of the month through the end of the month.
That was kind of my presumption, which is why I asked. I mean, do we often have people join groups in the middle of a month, and if so, what kind of effect does that have?
Effectively, I think first of all, we did file this prior to June 1st, and I don't profess to be as expert a lawyer as lawyers you have on staff on your regulations, but it does seem that perhaps it would be permissible for this to take effect June 1st. We did file this before that date. But my understanding, and Donna, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the groups basically balance on a calendar month basis, and so the effect of allowing this to take effect June 10th most likely will be that SAPA will not be able to join the balancing group until the July 1st date rolls around. All right, but SAPA understands that this did happen pretty quickly, and that may be one consequence of the filing that we made with the time frame we made it on.
Mr. Jacobson, is that sort of your understanding, too, that June 10th effectively means July 1st? Or?
Yeah, it could well. I mean, there are balancing takes place on a daily basis and on a monthly basis, from what I'm familiar with. So, and they're talking about the monthly parameter. That could be. If there were a way to approve it on June 1st, I would accommodate the customer. But I just don't know if that's legally possible to do that. It was actually filed May 30th. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I could, one more.
Go ahead.
Thanks. For MidAmerican, is there some, pressing reason that, you know, June 1st would be preferable to July 1st? I prefer not to act, and make things active after, to post date them, so to speak, unless absolutely necessary. Any thoughts? And again, I don't even know if it's legally possible, but is there a particular reason why July 1st is create some sort of burden for SAP or MidAmerican?
This is Donna Collins, and SAPA asked us to allow them into the group balancing as of June 1st. They actually, I received the email request at 4:59 on May 29th, and so we really started dealing with this on the 30th to try to make it happen. We were trying to, let our customer do what they wanted to do.
So, sir, your reason for wanting June 1st is good customer service and responsiveness to, again, one of your customers. Is that right?
Exactly, yes.
But there's not necessarily any sort of a system benefit to June 1st or July 1st. Is that right?
Not to MidAmerican, no.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Commissioner Colbert.
Yes, this is for MidAmerican. I was wondering why SAPA wanted to be included in the group balancing instead of the individual balancing. Is there some trend there that you see that could affect the group balancing in the future?
Actually, as I understand it, and back almost 15 years ago when this special agreement was written with SAPA's predecessor, the agreement called for using Northern Natural's balancing provisions. And at that time, as I understand it, the utility didn't have the group balancing provisions that we do now, which are more actually more beneficial to the customer. And so they just and the balancing provisions that were put into the original agreement were at Alumax's request. And so, you know, like I said, now our tariff balancing provisions are actually more favorable to the customer, and so they just recognize that and are asking to do what our regular tariffed customers do. Okay. Not under a special agreement. Our customers not under a special agreement.
So their usage hasn't actually gone south on them, or demand gone down. It's just a different pricing or billing. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, under a group situation, you can understand balancing means taking the amount of gas that you nominate every day. And if you happen to use more than you've nominated, then you get out of balance. If you can group with a bunch of different customers, the obvious idea is that some will be high, some will be low. They will mediate each other to some degree. And it creates a cushion when you're in a group like that. And so that's the benefit of being in a group balancing type situation. In this case, with a marketer taking on the risk, it's probably the way it works is the marketer makes the nomination, and if it becomes out of balance, the marketer actually takes the risk for paying the penalties of the imbalance. So it's just another way to do it. It tends to shift risk from one individual customer to the group.
Thank you.
And back to the question as far as any benefit to MidAmerican, the only benefit that we would have is that we have to bill under different provisions for SAPA under the current way that we're doing it, and to bill for any group balancing penalties under the new agreement would be how we bill everyone else. So we would get rid of a special billing situation, but that's kind of a minimal issue.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly. Any further questions? If not, I will move that the Commission approve the amendment to Natural Gas Service Agreement, waive the 30-day notice, and make it effective today, June 10th. Discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Kolbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. Next item on our agenda is telecommunications. Item number one is TC08-041, matter of the application of Momentum Telecom Incorporated for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services and local exchange services in South Dakota. Question before the commission is, shall a commission grant a COA to Momentum Telecom Incorporated? Is there someone representing Momentum Telecom?
This is Rose Mulvaney Henry on the telephone line representing Momentum Telecom, Inc.
Good morning. Would you state your name again, please?
Yes, it's Rose Mulvaney, M-U-L, V as in Victor, A-N-Y, Henry, H-E-N-R-Y, with Bolt, Cummings, Connors, and Barry, PLC.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And you're up.
Commissioners, this is an application on behalf of my client for a certificate of authority to provide local and inter-exchange telecommunications services in South Dakota. We have had a couple of rounds of data requests from the staff, which we worked through, I believe, to their satisfaction, and my client is prepared, upon approval from the commission, to offer services, telecommunications services throughout South Dakota.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Best.
Thank you, Chairman. This is Harlan Best, the staff.
The company filed in accordance with our administrative rules. There were no interveners. The company will offer competitive local exchange service in the Quest areas of South Dakota. Staff would recommend that the commission grant the company's request for confidential treatment of its financial statements, approve the local service area for Quest areas only, have rural safeguards, and there also have the restrictions on the company from offering prepaid services, collecting deposits, or advance payments.
Thank you. Any questions by the commission? Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Beston, this is a question only tangentially related to this particular docket, but we always see financials with these COAs, and obviously when we've got a condition barring prepayment or deposits, it's not nearly as big a deal. But how do you verify? I mean, do we do anything to double-check the numbers in the financials that were provided?
In this case, the financials were for the parent, not for the applicant, which is why the restrictions are requested or recommended by staff.
Okay, so, and it's not very often that we grant the COA without those conditions, but in that instance where we've got financials from, you know, the company itself who wants the COA, are there data requests from staff that attempt to verify the validity of those numbers?
If the financials are not an audited financial report, then yes, we do.
Thanks very much.
Any further questions? Is there a motion?
I'm moving the case of TC08-041 that the commission grant the COA of Momentum Telecom Incorporated according to staff's recommendations.
Discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hampson votes aye. Motion carries. Second item under telecommunications is TC08-042 in the matter of the filing of MCI Metro Access Transmission Services LLC doing business as Verizon Access Transmission Services for approval of its access services tariff. Question before the commission is, shall the commission grant the petition and waivers requested by MCI Metro Access Transmission Services LLC doing business as Verizon Access Transmission Services, and shall the commission approve the intrastate switched access tariff? Mr. Gertz.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. My name is Dave Gervis. I'm a lawyer from Pierre, and I represent Verizon Business in this matter. And what I'd like to introduce Tom Dixon, who is a longtime regulatory lawyer who has represented before Verizon MCI and now represents and works for Verizon. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Dixon to explain the filing, if I may.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gertis. Mr. Dixon, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Chairman Hansen, Commissioners Colbeck and Johnson. My name is Tom Dixon. I'm the Assistant General Counsel for the Northwest Region for Verizon, and I caused both this tariff and a petition for exemption and waiver to be filed in this action. The switched access tariff was initially filed on April 22nd with an effective day of May 22nd. We received data requests from the staff and responded to those data requests and also extended the due date of the tariff to June 15th to allow the commission to consider the tariff at this June 10th open meeting. As you have noted, AT&T intervened in this case and was granted intervention status. On June 5th, we filed a revised, or at least we mailed the revised tariff to the commission, which made modifications consistent with requests of the staff and also consistent with the protested intervention filed by AT&T. It's my understanding Mr. Bill Van Camp is present and will acknowledge that AT&T and MCI have reached agreement on that portion of the tariff that was referred to as the 8YY transit service portion, which was the only concern AT&T raised about the tariff. In addition, on May 21st, Mr. Gertis filed on behalf of the company a petition for exemption under the Commission's Rule 2010-2711, which would allow us to provide switched access services and establish rates without providing a cost study. Our justification for requesting that was because we do not ordinarily prepare cost studies, particularly state-specific cost studies. We have less than 50 access lines in South Dakota at this time. and providing cost studies at this point would be prohibitive and incredibly expensive from a standpoint of providing for this service. In addition, we have set our rates at the equivalent to the composite rate that Quest Corporation charges in the state of approximately 6 cents per minute. We've also asked for a waiver of Rule 20-10-2712, which would suggest we should set our rates at those for local exchange carriers with fewer than 100,000 access lines, and clearly we have fewer than that. But those rates would result in actually substantially higher rates. I use, for example, the rates that were approved by the Commission in December of, I believe, 06 for LECA, the Local Exchange Carrier Association, where the switched access rates, at least the composite rate, was about 12.5 cents a minute or slightly more, double than what we're proposing here. Also, as I've noted in my petition, this commission has granted such waivers to prior companies such as Quest in 2008, again in 2005. Also, has granted that waiver to the South Dakota Network. I see that there's a waiver on the agenda today immediately after our case for a waiver from the cost studies. But I think the case that's most similar to where we are is the Orbitron case, where the commission granted a waiver to that CLEC on the condition that it set its rates at or near those of Quest, which again is what we are doing here. We provide services through Quest Network Elements or what's also referred to as a commercial agreement, Quest Platform Plus, and as a result, our underlying costs are charged through Quest. Accordingly, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, unless there's further requests for information at this point, we would request that you approve the tariff as it was revised on June 5th, which should be consistent with the requirements and concerns of AT&T and staff, and also would request you approve the petition for exemption and the request for waiver as filed so that these rates can go into effect on June 15th. I also have on the phone Mr. Don Price, who, as I indicated, is the Director of Regulatory Public Policy for MCI. I don't intend to have him make a presentation at this time unless one is requested, but I have him here in the event you have any questions concerning the substance of the tariff. He's worked extensively on the tariff and with staff data requests and with AT&T.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dixon. Mr. Gerdes, did you have anything further?
I couldn't have said it better myself, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Van Camp, your name was used. I assume you want to have at least an opportunity to say whether what was said was up or down.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. At least my name was not used disparagingly. So, Bill Van Camp, I am the in-state counsel for AT&T Communications of the Midwest, and I am here to verify that AT&T is comfortable with the revisions as it relates to the 8YY tariff pages, and that AT&T has no objection to the switched access filing requests of Verizon.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Excuse me. We do have staff here. Mr. Jacobson.
Thank you, Chairman. As was stated, this filing was made pursuant to 2010-2711 and the appropriate petition has been filed. I would recommend that the Commission approve the petition. The waiver requested of 2010-2712, I would recommend that the Commission grant the waiver. Also, included in the Commission's order should be the condition that switched access rates in this filing be approved and that the applicant be allowed to file adjustments to these rates so long as they are equal to or lower than Quest Corporation's rates or until the Commission shall order otherwise. And finally, I would just recommend the Commission approve MCI Metro Access Transmission Services LLC, DBA, Verizon Access Transmission Services, South Dakota Tariff Number 2.
Thank you. Questions by any of the commissioners? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that the commission first grant the petition, second grant the waivers, making it clear that adjustments to that could be filed as long as the rate was equal to or less than the Quest rate or until ordered by the commission, and then third, that the commission approve the switched access tariff number 2 requested by the company.
Thank you. Any discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. Third item under telecommunications is TC08-044 in the matter of the request by Fort Randall Telephone Company for a waiver of a requirement to file a switched access cost study. Question before the commission is, today shall the commission grant the waiver of a requirement to file a switched access cost study. And Fort Randall is on the phone with us, representing Fort Randall, and Mr. Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, Mike Bradley, attorney representing Fort Randall Telephone Company. Your rules require normally that a local exchange carrier would file a cost study to support its intrastate access charges every 3 years. Your rules also provide an opportunity to seek a waiver from any of those requirements for good cause. And Fort Randall Telephone Company has requested a waiver of that cost study preparation standards on two grounds. Number one, obviously Fort Randall is very small. It has to use outside consultants. It uses Olson, Thielen, and people like myself to prepare those cost studies and then present them and get them adopted. And to avoid those costs, and also Fort Randall's initial cost study indicates that it would have to increase its rates, and it's willing to forego that increase in order to avoid the burdens and costs necessary to support that increase. We note that a similar, if not identical, request by Quest Corporation was recently approved by the Commission in another docket. And so on the grounds that it benefits the public and that there's not going to be an increase and benefits the company and that it saves the cost, we respectfully request that the waiver be granted.
Thank you, Mr. Bradley. Is there anyone else from representing Fort Randall wishes to speak before us? Mr. Best.
Thank you, Chairman. Harlan Best of Commission staff. Staff would recommend that the Commission grant the waiver request of Fort Randall for the 3-year exemption from having to file a cost study.
Thank you. Any questions by the commissioners? Seeing none, is there a motion?
A motion in TC08-044 that the commission grant the waiver of a requirement to file a switched access cost study according to the staff's recommendations.
Thank you. Any discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. That completes our agenda. Announcements are that the next regularly scheduled commission meeting will be held June 24th at 9:30 in room 464 in this room in the State Capitol Building. Commission meetings are also scheduled for July 8 and July 29. Commissioners and staff will be attending the Mid-American Regulatory Conference in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma on June 14 through 18, 2008. The Public Utilities Commission offices will be closed Friday, July 4th, in observance of Independence Day. A hearing in dockets TC07-111 through TC07-116 will be held July 29th through August 1st in the Floyd Matthews Training Center, Foss Building and Pier. The hearing will begin at 1:30 p.m. on July 29th. Hearing in dockets TC06-175, 176, 178, 180, 188, 189 will be held August 20th through the 22nd, 2008 in the Capitol Lake Visitor Center, and the hearing will begin at 9 a.m. on August 20th. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Colbeck?
Aye.
Hansen votes aye. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you all for your participation.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, this is Tom Dixon. Thank you for allowing me to appear by telephone on this matter. We really appreciate it and also appreciate the staff and AT&T's efforts in helping us through this.
You're most welcome, and we appreciate you recognizing staff for their hard work.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Bye-bye.